Hail and welcome to Besom Buddies, a pagan podcast. I'm Paul.
And I'm Cody.
And we're the gay married Wiccans that your pastor warned you about.
But seriously, we thought it'd be fun to bring you our private pagan conversations out of the broom closet and into the public.
Because nothing could go wrong with that.
We don't know who will listen, but what the fuck? Welcome. Are you ready?
Yeah.
We'll always be Besom Buddies, friends, witches, and pals. We'll always be Besom Buddies, a magical pairing, no need for despairing.
Girl. Welcome back. So I can hear you listeners out there wondering, who are these people? Why should I listen to them? And how did they meet? So we thought we'd give you a little taste of that right now.
Yeah. My name is Cody. I'm 28. And I work in higher education. I got my bachelor's in history. And then I got my master's in student affairs. So I work with college students professionally for a career. And I'm from Ohio originally, middle of nowhere, Ohio, literally. And then I went to Pennsylvania for undergrad, and then I went to Maryland for grad school. So I've sort of lived around the Mid-Atlantic my whole life. I enjoy long walks on the beach, and I've hardly ever been on a beach, to be honest. Landlocked states. Well, Maryland wasn't, but didn't really go to the beach very often. I like D&D. I like tabletop role playing in general. Board games for sure. Overwatch. My goodness, I like to read. Paul is miming things to me to help me remember things I enjoy, which often I need. What else did I like? I do like to knit, but only in the winter because my hands get sweaty, and that's nasty in the summer. With like wool. And I like animals. Oh my goodness, all animals, really. Actually, yeah, pretty much all animals. But yeah, that's me.
Yeah, and I'm Paul. I'm also 28 years old. I am a coffee slinger at a major corporation's cafe, which will remain nameless. And I really enjoy the doing of things. So I like jewelry making because I like to work with like stones and bones and wood. I like knitting and crocheting also, which she got me into actually. I also like to tabletop role play Dungeons and Dragons, always playing a tiefling of some sort. And I like to play Vampire the Masquerade. I'm also like currently running a game. I'm a storyteller for Vampire the Masquerade. Board games, and I love to cook. I would say cooking is maybe my primary passion in life.
That's my favorite passion of yours.
I know it is. Yeah, I definitely love to cook, and I can cook you a mean curry, let me tell you. So if you come around, that's what you're getting into. And yeah, the other primary interest of ours collectively is our daughters.
Oh, yeah.
Our daughters are two cats, Pike and Yasha.
One is trying to chew into the trash right now.
As she's wont to do, in fact. Their names came from Critical Role, which is a Dungeons & Dragons live show hosted by Matthew Mercer. Way to go. And Ashley Johnson's characters are named Pike and Yasha. So that's how we decided on the names. And we love them. We love them so much.
We do. Little beasts.
Yeah, they definitely are. So we thought now we could kind of give you the Spark Notes version of our paths, but give them a teaser. What path do you follow currently?
Yeah, I'm part of the Blue Star tradition of Wicca, which is sort of a British traditional Wicca adjacent group. And I'm a dedicant, which they have a little bit of a different degree system than many other traditional Wicca groups. But I've been part of Blue Star for a couple of years now. And I'm it's definitely a place where I feel like it's home.
Yeah, absolutely. I myself am in a British traditionalist Wicca group. I am an initiate into that. Again, I'm going to try to keep that purposely vague because I want to, you know, make sure everybody knows that I'm speaking only for myself and not account of my tradition because we all can only speak from our personal experiences anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, absolutely. There's our disclaimer for legal. Yeah, yeah. You know, that way the witch hunter general doesn't come for us.
How do I get that position? That sounds rad.
I know, it does sound rad. It's all in the Melius Maleficarum anyway. But yeah, so that's where we're currently at. But you may be asking, how did we get there?
Oh, and how did we meet?
How did we meet? That's true. Let's cover that now.
Yeah. Well, it was how many years ago? We were 17.
17.
17, so 28 plus minus 17, so like 11-ish years.
11 years, yeah.
I was in Ohio, and you were in Maryland.
Yes.
So we were long distance from the start, and we met via, of course, the internet, and specifically YouTube.
Yeah,
right?
It is actually because of YouTube, because a small amount of backstory for our listeners here. I used to make videos on YouTube when it was a small corporation that ran itself and wasn't owned by Viacom or Google. No offense to them. And it was just people uploading their visits to the zoo. and I made videos about Wicked then. I had a chat room that I was a part of on a website which is now defunct except in Japan called Stick'em, where it was you could video chat and have like private groups and private rooms. So I was in that group. And actually, Cody watched my videos, and I believe we started talking when you sent me a message.
I had a question about tarot.
Yes. Yeah. It was you asked what tarot deck I was reading with in one of my videos about tarot. And we started talking from them. And actually, after seeing some of your video content, which you used to post,
yeah,
I invited you to the group, gave the password, and you showed up.
I did. And then... I mean, yeah, I guess just it went from there. I mean, we friended each other in MySpace because that was the thing then.
God, it was.
And I guess we got to know each other a little bit through that interesting medium. And I mean, yeah, I mean, we just kept talking and then we got to meet in person.
That's true, because we were in a similar phase of life because we're the same age. So yep. We were both, you know, it was like the summer before senior year. We were trying to, you know, come into our futures. And really plan what we were going to be doing. And we actually started talking separate from the group on Yahoo Messenger. And then eventually through text messages, which is very helpful for us because, you know, we were in network. So the minutes were free. Yeah. That was a concern at the time.
Oh, that was true.
That was awful. And actually, we only started talking on the phone. I had to go out of town to visit some family. And I was like, oh, here's my phone number. Maybe you'll reach out to me. And that's how that started. But then, yeah, we started kind of dating long distance.
Yep.
When we were still in high school, still doing our own things. Yeah, that was 11 years ago.
I know, it feels forever ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then we were, yeah, then we got to meet in person thanks to a mutual friend who drove me down from Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Shout out. And... and it was just, I mean, that's when I think we both really knew, like when we got to spend that time in person. I mean, we kind of knew online, but we like did. It was, yeah, it was like really set.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be watching Project Runway while on the phone with each other if it wasn't your future soulmate.
We did Wendy Pepper.
But it wasn't even her season though. It was, remember, Kato and all them. It was finale. We watched it on the phone together. I remember that.
The one had a collection that looked like tea strainers.
Oh, so
or
cool.
Tea coffee filters.
Yeah, coffee filters. Oh my God, it was so good. Anyway. but yeah, we really knew once we met each other in person.
Yeah.
You could tell that things were meant to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have stuck it out.
But then we were a long distance still for like four more years?
No, more. Because it wasn't until... grad school that you moved to Maryland, which yeah. And you had a year off between
after high school, so it was like
so that would
years.
Have been like almost 6 years
total.
It was,
yeah,
so that's a long time to maintain a long distance relationship.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It is, but yeah, I mean, we made it work because like I was, like you said, I was an undergrad in Pennsylvania, and he was still in Maryland. So you know, we visited each other on breaks, and I would come down to Maryland, or he would come to PA. And I mean, that was always super nice. So, but yeah, then I went to grad school conveniently in Maryland, which obviously worked out super well. And then, you know, we eventually got to move in together. And
yeah, by that point, we were already engaged. We were engaged when we were still long distance.
That's true. Yeah, my senior year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He proposed to me at my work.
It did.
He came up to the front register. He'd conspired, actually, with my supervisor.
I did.
To get me moved off of drive-thru where I love to be and put on front register where I usually don't like it. and he is at the back of a line that had formed. And I said, oh, what can I get for you, sir? And I was just trying to be kind of funny because obviously it's him. And he pulls out a ring box and he says, well, I'd like to order one fiance and I'd like to pay with this ring.
So corny.
It was so great. I started crying immediately. Are you kidding me? And then I immediately turned to my supervisor and was like, do I get to go on my break now?
And you did.
And I did. It was fabulous. And then there were regular customers of mine who were in the cafe who applauded.
They did.
That was cute.
That was really precious.
Yeah. And then little did we know, I also got a free quesadilla at Qdoba next door on my lunch break. It was fabulous. Anyway, that's a different story.
Yes.
So we were already engaged, even though we were long distance.
But it would only be like another like year and a half before we...
No, it was longer. We were... Oh, yeah. No, it was a year and a half before we started living together.
Yeah. Then we started living together. And then...
We didn't get married until...
2016.
Gosh, has it been that long into Trump's presidency already?
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, we got married at the end of 2016.
Yes, we did. We wanted to make sure it happened before he was in office because gay marriage is a tenuous right, everyone.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, and then ever since, we've just been living our lives.
Living our lives together, as you do.
With our babies.
Yep. As you know, the millennials that we are.
Yes. So yeah, I guess that's kind of how we met.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the next stuff I think we'll talk about is kind of our path, our pagan path. Well, a spiritual path, I suppose. And kind of how that developed and started. And it's interesting the ways that it coincides with our relationship. And obviously, like, our relationship has been like a third of our lives. I don't know.
No, I mean, it really is almost half of our lives. Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, that's wild. So obviously our spiritual paths are intertwined a lot too. So how did you kind of grow up spiritually?
Well, it all started in a small town in Pennsylvania when I was forced to go to Catholic school. And I mean, we were like Catholic, so much so that I got chosen to carry the wine at my first Holy Communion because the priests and my teachers thought I was like a shining example of Catholicism. Which is really ironic in retrospect.
Yikes.
And it was kind of expected then that I would be, because I was chosen to do that, I would become an altar boy. And then I would go into seminary sometime later in the future. So they were training me for the priesthood, which is pretty funny. I shouldn't use the word grooming in that context because it sounds a little coercive now.
No.
Sorry, Catholics. but I discovered witchcraft because my sister was reading books about it on the sly. So I actually snuck into her bedroom, going through her things as a younger brother is wont to do, and discovered this book about witchcraft, which I think was Silver Ravenwolf book. I think it was. I snatched it up as a younger brother does, and came back to my bedroom with it, flipped it open, and the whole world sort of spun around me as I realized that this thing was real. Yeah. It was something that people genuinely believed and that it could be. It was like an epiphany.
What was one of the next steps at, like, kind of after that and processing and thinking about that? What was one of the next steps you took that like made you feel like, you know, a witch or a Wiccan or a pagan?
Well, I like to say that I have like two moments that I can think of. The first time that I ever prayed to the goddess with a capital G, I remember that very emotionally because I literally started crying. Because it was like you picked up the phone when I would, you know, pray to the Christian God. And it was like there was just the dial tone, but there wasn't anybody there. And when I prayed to the goddess, it was like somebody picked up on the other end and was like actually listening to me. So I remember that was a whole thing. So then, you know, I started getting on the internet because this is the, you know, mid to late 90s. And Angel Fire and GeoCities were a thing.
Oh, goodness, yes.
So I found out all of these people, this kind of network of people that believed in all of this kind of cool, amazing stuff, and really started taking it as much as I could on our dial-up connection.
Right. And you were keeping this pretty hidden at the time.
Yeah.
Right. So when did it start being something that was like you were more open with, whether you told people or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, with my small group of friends when I was younger, they sort of always knew that I was like into something, but I think a lot of them thought it was like a fantasy game that I was living in, sort of this other reality I'd created for myself. But they definitely were interested about it. But it wasn't until middle school, when we all start coming into our own, that I started becoming a little bit more open about things. I remember very distinctly, I had my first summer job and I got my paycheck. And, you know, when you're like 12, 13 and you have a paycheck coming in and you have all this money that seems like you should not listen to Susie Orman and get a Roth IRA, I think you just do whatever you want with it. You follow your real will. So I would go to my local Borders, RIP Borders, and I would buy every book I could about Wicca and witchcraft that I could. So I would say that's really when I came into my being.
Yeah. And you were still keeping those hidden?
Well, sort of. So my father and my mother were separated at this point. And my father would take me to the mall to blow through my paycheck. I think partially there was some like voyeuristic joy in it for him, where he was like, I wish I could just go on a spree and not be a responsible adult and spend all my money. So I think he liked to do that. I also think he wanted that leverage of like, I'm a cool dad. Look at me. I'm letting you be your own person. So he didn't mind that I was buying books about Wicca and witchcraft. I'm sure he didn't believe in any of it because he's like, was like an agnostic atheist at the time. And so he would let me buy all those books, but I would kind of keep it slightly more hidden from my mother until maybe like eighth grade.
What changed in eighth grade?
Well, in eighth grade, like I had cultivated a particular group of friends around me. And so, you know, I was really trying to win the persecution Olympics because I was the gay kid, the goth kid, and that witch kid. So I was really subversive, especially for the small town in Maryland that I was living in. So I had attracted this whole group of others. And I think there is something about having your own independent groups of like weirdos that like really shores up your confidence and your identity.
Your people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You find your tribe. Well, I found that tribe real fast and I ran with it. So that's when it really changed.
So through like, I guess that was like middle school into high school era, like what did like practicing look like for you?
Oh my gosh. Well, I've always been very into like the practical experiential parts of witchcraft. Because for me, being a witch is being a doer. I had an altar in my bedroom that I kept up all the time. And usually I had a shrine to some deities. At the time it would have been Aphrodite and Apollo. And I would keep that up and I would do things on full moons in my bedroom. But then I also had a place really close to where I was living that was like a sediment pond, just a little like stream and a little bit of a pond and some woods. And I would pack up my ritual backpack with all my tools and I would climb a hill next to the thing and I would do my Sabbath celebrations or particular rituals. But I literally was very much into crafting my own ritual practice and kind of getting in there. So I was definitely like a very active kind of pagan.
Yeah. Well, so I know kind of coinciding with all of this, when you talked about a little bit earlier, your sort of YouTube stuff. So how did that play into all of it? Because it was very pagan centric, your YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually really quick, I started on YouTube technically because of gay rights stuff, because I thought it would be a cool place to kind of voice my opinions. Ooh, about
let
gay
me
rights.
Let me see if I can remember. Was your first video about the Westboro Baptist Church?
Yes, it was.
I remember. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, it was. And I was wearing a yellow polo shirt. It was awful because I'm a goth kid. Why did I have a yellow polo shirt on? Anyway, yeah, I actually started because of that. And then I was, you know, enjoying myself sitting in front of my really bad webcam. And I went, what else do I know a bunch about? Well, I know a lot about witchcraft. So let me get talking about that. And again, finding that chat room and those like-minded people and starting to be exposed to different kinds of paths and traditions and flavors of witchcraft and larger pagan religions really helped me.
Yeah.
And so kind of being able to constantly live in that dialogue with these people was really, really helpful and pivotal, really, in kind of creating who I am. I would also say that something else we used to do on our chat room was host online ritual. So we it was a video chat room, as I said. And so we would host online ritual and each person would maybe call a quarter, or maybe they would cast the online circle, or maybe they would invoke the deity or do the working. But we would all be kind of, even though we're scattered, and I mean scattered across the globe, we had people in Europe and people in South America even that were involved in our group. And we would all be kind of coming together for a particular thing. So that also added another kind of techno-pagan layer to what I was doing. So for like really most of high school, when this was going on, and especially later high school, like I was living like a Wiccan life fully. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about that, like Aphrodite and Apollo were the folks that the gods that were really you were drawn to at that point. When did that start to change?
Oh, gosh. What a sordid tale. Actually, right after we had started speaking, actually, I was sort of doing some ancestor work, just kind of like trying to tune into my ancestral spirits as they are. And I kind of realized like I have this really Germanic presence in my ancestry. So I was like, oh, maybe I should research the Germanic, the Norse gods and see where that's going to take me. So that was the first time I had stepped out of this kind of Greco Wiccan thing, this Hellenistic Wicca that I was doing. And yeah, then of course it made sense because I was worshiping Aphrodite to look into Freya because I had always heard that she was the Norse love goddess and she's basically just, you know, the warrior version of Aphrodite, which isn't true at all, by the way. So that really, yeah, that got me kicking off. And then I really just went through and read so many books about Norse pagan practice and Asatru, and sort of trying to like kind of diverging from my original path following that.
Yeah, I remember, oh gosh, I'm not sure exactly when it fell, but like kind of instead of doing Sabbat stuff, you would do kind of like a modified bloat.
Yeah.
Type of, so by yourself.
It was really funny too, because I was intending on kind of bringing this Norse practice into my Wiccan practice and making like a Wicca true moment.
Well, what happened to that?
Yeah, well, you know, you cast the circle and then you start doing things and realize more and more that less Wiccan things are happening and more Asatru things are happening. And then all of a sudden you realize you're standing outside in the middle of a field pouring out a drinking horn full of apple cider, probably at the time, frankly, because we were under 21, and like hailing all the spirits and the land whites. And you realize that maybe things have gone a little astray.
So you were sort of veering into like Norse paganism at that point.
Yeah.
When did that start to change a little bit?
Wow. Okay. Which came first? So at the time, this kind of coincides with something you'll talk about a little bit more too. But you were talking about like the Kemetic Orthodoxy and you were kind of getting involved with them. And so I thought as a supportive boyfriend, I should, you know, take it upon myself to learn more about what you were doing. And that's sort of how that evolution of like the Egyptian flavor of my path took on. I don't want to give too much away because that's your discovery to talk about.
Oh, goodness.
But yeah, like I was definitely involved with that, the Kemetic Orthodoxy, then for several years. You know, and that was kind of my first group that I was in, because before that I was solitary. So even though we weren't in person with these people, it was this constant network and that dialogue again, that really made you think about things in a different way. And because it's such a non-European tradition, it's so out of the scope of what Wicca gives you or any of the other Indo-European traditions give you, you start looking at the world totally differently.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really helpful. It definitely made me question, you know, my deeply held beliefs for so many years. And I think that, again, was pivotal in shaping who I would end up being. So yeah, that would be where it came into that.
So you spent some years kind of with the Kemetic Orthodoxy and exploring that sort of Kemetic, which is Egyptian, if for folks who don't know, sort of the pre-Greco-Roman influence Egypt. So you spent a number of years doing that. When did that start to shift?
Yeah, wow.
Because as we all know, we know the ending point. That was the current point.
Yeah, we spoiled it for you. You know where we end up, and it sounds an awful lot like where we started. So yeah, then after the Kemetic Orthodoxy, we had a small moment where we kind of intersected a little bit with some Druidry. At least we had a Druid Grove from ADF very close to us, so we attended some rituals with them, which was super cool. Had lovely people, a great ritual. But that didn't quite fit. So then I sort of had this moment where I was like, maybe I don't fit anywhere. Like maybe the answer to all this searching is that there isn't anything. So actually, for a small period of time, I identified as more like an agnostic atheist and sort of stepped away from the whole metaphysics entirely. But that didn't last very long, as you might imagine. So then I was like, okay, well, Wicca is where I started. Wicca is where I felt the most home and the most me, and what was the most influential for me. So I stumbled back into Wicca, but this time I decided I would join a group. And so I put out feelers and I ended up in the outer court of a British traditional group. And here I am now.
Yeah. What sort of made you transition from considering not being a solitaire anymore? Because that was very important to you early on.
Yeah. Right? No, I would have fought people. I would have fought people about being a solitary. I wanted to have me and my gods and me and my spirits, and I was going to be me. And you couldn't have convinced me otherwise. But yeah, it just sort of worked out that I kind of went to the core of what Wicca is, how it started, how it evolved, and thought, well, this is a different flavor of thing than I've experienced. I want to like kind of dip my toes in. And the good thing about outer courts is it's non-committal, right? Like, if it's not for you, it's not for you, and you can get out. So I decided, like, I might as well. That's sort of where it came down to. I might as well, and plus it would keep me accountable. And I think being in a group definitely does keep you honest and keep you accountable. So that's definitely what changed my mind. And then obviously experiencing, because like I said, I'm so experiential. Yeah. So for me, like, being able to experience that ritual practice together was really, really mind-blowing. So that's why I'm here where I am.
Yeah.
So what about you? I know that me and you both have very different beginnings, so.
Yeah, I guess early on, I mean, my family wasn't particularly religious. I think we went to like Easter and Christmas. My parents were tangentially Christian, just because of how they were raised. But it was never like a super big thing in our house, or really anybody in my super immediate family. Sure, they were all Christian, but it wasn't like a huge thing. I had that, and I don't have much memory of that being a huge important thing for me, but spirituality was something that I was always drawn to, especially as I got like more towards middle school and I guess brain development wise, just like, I don't know, that's more of a thing that one cares about. And I ultimately got involved in Christianity, like of my own choice. I had a group of friends in more early high school that were Christian, and we, you know, would go to youth group together, and we did like plays, church plays, and like all sorts of stuff together. And I would pretty much be at church every Sunday, and then we would go to their house after, and then we would go to like late night Bible study on Sunday. So I was like super committed. It was definitely like the community that pulled me in.
So how did you first discover like witchcraft or paganism as a whole?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I had a little experience that probably set the stage. When I was in probably fourth or fifth grade, our neighbor that I was pretty good friends with, she had Teen Witch by Silver Ravenwolf, with, you know, the doorstop of every house in the 90s, virtually, in the early 2000s. I remember she cast like one of the spells in there, like where you put something in the freezer, like a name or something in ice. I don't remember what it was, but she was like, she was going on about how she did this. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
That's so interesting.
That's so interesting, right? So like I would flip through her copy every once in a while, but like I didn't own it myself. And I guess I would have been interested in owning it, but like we were pretty low SES socioeconomic status. So like, and I wasn't trying to ask my dad to buy a book, like a random book. So it was like a good many years, probably 3 or 4 years. And my dad had this like box of books that he like, I don't know. He just like collected stuff for garage sales, basically. Like, I don't know. He would get stuff from people. I don't even know. He's that kind of person. And he let me like go through this box to see if there are any books that I wanted. And Celtic Magic by DJ Conway was in there. And I was like, oh, what's this? Because that was after the time, like, Harry Potter, obviously, had been huge. And I loved, like, Charmed and, you know, lots of different things like that that were always really intriguing to me. So Celtic Magic was, I don't know, it just, like, really ignited my imagination. And even though now, like, in retrospect, like, 80% of it is kind of fictionalized, but, you know, it is what it is. it still had a huge impact on me because it basically detailed, like, what, I mean, it alleged about how, like, some pagan Celtic polytheists would have had their religion, which, you know, we don't actually have a ton of details about some of that, but, you know, how to, like, do it in the modern day. So that was really big for me and definitely had a big impact and started me on my whole journey.
Absolutely. And so, like you said, you would come from a friend group that was very Christian, very of your own volition. You'd surrounded yourself with church people. So did you come out of the broom closet to your friend group, or did you keep it kind of quiet?
Yeah, I guess I kept it pretty quiet. I mean, some people knew I was, like, a little bit interested, but I didn't really tell anybody. And that was pretty easy because I, as, like, a solitary eclectic Wiccan was probably what I would have called myself from, like, I don't know, off and on through, because, you know, Christianity, as I was figuring out my sexuality, I think that was the biggest thing that was, like, made it really hard to participate in church stuff. So Wicca was, like, super appealing because I felt like I had kind of had a place there in paganism in general, maybe in more particular. But no, I didn't really tell anybody too much. I definitely really kept it to myself, and I was more of, like, an academic pagan, like, you know, more reading and researching, and I did a little practice, but not a ton.
Yeah, and that is something that we definitely diverged on. So I'm actually really interested in how that kind of colors your perspective, because you are so much into the academics. So how did you kind of go from place to place on the grand tour of paganism that we both share?
I know. So honestly, most of it started after I met you, because by the time I'd met you, I was definitely, like, full force into, like, a solitary eclectic Wicca sort of idea. So then after we met, I think that was probably a huge reason why I was interested in you as well, to be honest, because I wanted more of that in my life. And at that point, like, as a friend, like, that I didn't have grand machinations at that point. Of, like, being with you necessarily. Quickly happened, though. I wanted more of that in my life. So, you know, it was pretty quick that I was able to, like, you know, practice a little bit more, like, you know, a little more ritual and devotion stuff to, like, the Lord and Lady. And then I sort of quickly understood that, for me, spirituality was so grounded in community and kind of sharing that with others. And I think that's why solitary Wicca was hard for me. And I mean, you know this too, because at that point we were dating and talked about this stuff a lot back then. So I always kind of knew being solitary wasn't it for me.
That ain't it.
No.
And that's really cool. So then, obviously, because you didn't feel correct in this solitary Wiccan practice, you went traveling. What was the next pit stop on the tour?
Yeah, I guess that would have been Comanic Orthodoxy. Yeah. So you talked about this a little bit, of course. I discovered Comanic Orthodoxy because some of our mutual friends at that point in kind of the YouTube scene at that point, the dying YouTube scene,
yeah,
as
truly.
Viacom and Google happened, kind of were looking into Comanic Orthodoxy and talking about it a little bit and having some sort of, like, Egyptian Wiccan practice at that time. So the Comanic Orthodoxy was really appealing to me because it had such a beautiful structure and kind of relationship with, you know, what we know of how the ancient Comanic people kind of practice their religion in their daily life. And it was a very appealing modern reconstructionist sort of thing for me. Plus, it had this community and it was very digital based because people from all over the world are part of the Comanic Orthodoxy and, you know, they have stuff in person and some people live together. So that was appealing to me, but, you know, broke ass, no car,
young.
People couldn't really get to any of them. So that always kind of sucked. But, you know, there was a sense of community there that really, really appealed to me. And I've always been more interested in, like, devotion to the divine than a lot of other elements of practice. So the fact that was featured was really appealing to me. So, yeah, I did that for a good number of years.
Yeah. And you kind of previously in Wicca, I know you didn't feel like that particular click with a deity.
Yeah.
That didn't actually really happen for you much there. So being in the Quebec Orthodoxy, I know that you had started to form relationships with particular gods for the first time, maybe.
Yeah, more or less. And I think, well, I remember talking about this a lot, like, I don't know, 10 years ago. The, like, duotheism basis of Wicca, or at least how I perceived Wicca to be fully back then, was, I think, my biggest barrier. So participating in the Quebec Orthodoxy, which, you know, shreds all of that, you know, it's more, I mean, you know, polytheist, really, full on, was really helpful for me, especially as I eventually came back to Wicca with a much more fuller sense of deity, which was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And then after we both were in the Comedic Orthodoxy for a good period of time, a solid period of time, you started wandering again. And where did you end up next?
Yeah, so I think somewhat similarly, but maybe different. Well, no, I guess it would have been pretty parallel. I was, one of the biggest things I loved about the kind of Orthodoxy was the elements of ancestor veneration, which pretty much every culture has had since the beginning of time. But the ancestor veneration elements really did make me kind of look to my ancestors, and some of that landed in, you know, the British Isles and all of that proto-Indo-European sort of culture. So ADF, Andreoc Fane, became really appealing to me. Druidry became really appealing to me. And I didn't get, like, too far into it, but I considered their Dedicant's Path, which is, like, their sort of beginning course that they work with. And, you know, all of the reading and assignments, like, that was all super exciting to me because I love approaching spirituality that way. I don't know, it just helped my brain. And so I really did appreciate all of that and loved my time doing that. But of course, it would be years before we actually went in person to something. But again, it had that element of community, and that was exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, at this time, you were now living in northern Pennsylvania in the middle of kind of nothing, not surrounded by a lot of pagan folks or anything. And I know that that definitely continued to affect you while you were through undergrad as well. So talk a little bit about that. Like, where did you really find yourself spiritually the whole time you were getting through college?
Yeah, that was hard. That was another point where I was definitely like an academic pagan again. Like, it definitely aligned with me philosophically, but living in residence halls and adjusting to college life, I never adjusted. I did, but, you know, it was, every year was a little bit different and new challenges. It made it really hard for me to have like what I thought a daily practice should be. And at the time, like, for me, that was very like, you know, have an altar and have a space and do all that. In retrospect, I really didn't need that. And, you know, I practiced my spirituality in different ways, even in retrospect, but I didn't have a whole lot of a practice at that time. And it wasn't my most salient identity through undergrad.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you got out of undergrad and moved down my way to Maryland.
Yeah.
Where we finally weren't long distance anymore. And then where did that lead you?
Yeah. Well, that was the first time that I knew, like, I could start to make a little bit of a stable situation for myself, because at the time I knew, like, I thought I might want to stay in Maryland for a couple of years anyway, like, after grad school to work full time. So, you know, putting down some roots and, you know, grad school was challenging, but I was able to sort of figure out the routine and habit. And I was also yearning for that community, that sense of community that I never really got before anyway, but was always looking for. So it became time for me to sort of look to what's out there, and being around the DC area, there were so many, you know, options. So I started reaching out and kind of seeing what stuck initially, and, you know, had some email correspondences, some phone chats, some in-person meetings, and it quickly became pretty clear to me that, you know, I knew where my heart was pulling. So that's how I got involved in Blue Star at first.
Yeah, and finding that group for you was amazing.
Yeah, and a teacher, because that's something, as a solitary, like, you know, I can teach myself. I have taught myself a lot. And, you know, in working in higher education, even though I'm not necessarily in the academic side, you know, I do have a lot of experience with like curriculum development and education. So like that wasn't foreign to me. But again, like you said, having that accountability and somebody to kind of help guide you and share their wisdom and experience was really something I knew I needed, but didn't know I needed as much as I actually did.
Yeah. And I, you know, me and you at this point now are both in different groups.
Yeah.
And I know for me, it was crazy because even though I had all these years of like solitary Wiccan wisdom to pull off of from these authors and all these books that I read, it was like starting over. And you kind of come in at ground zero and it really shakes it up. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you experienced some of that as well.
For sure. I mean, And recently, we've been going back a little bit and looking at some of those, like, Wicca 101 books. And it's amazing how, like, totally valid and amazing those books are and the practices that we were able to build from it by ourselves. But also how different being part of a group and building that trust and intimacy with people around you, the power that has. So, yeah, totally different. But both very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the thing that I want to stress to people out there really quickly is even if you are alone and you are doing this by yourself, like that's valid.
Totally.
Don't let anybody else tell you it isn't.
Right.
And you're allowed to make mistakes. Do what you want to do. Just anything that works for you to get you kind of going works. But yeah, so now here you are. You found your group.
Yeah.
But we both found ourselves separated.
I know, we're both long distance from our groups.
Yeah, and how does that work out for you?
Yeah, well, it's funny thinking back and just talking about solitary stuff. Being part of a group doesn't mean you don't have a solitary practice. And in fact, I would argue, having a solitary practice becomes even more important because that's really when you do the work for yourself. Like, yeah, some of that happens with a group and some of that happens with a teacher, but so much of it has to be done and explored by you personally. And I think what I like about being in traditional Wicca as opposed to just solitary eclectic, which again is perfectly wonderful, but you know, we build these sets of rituals and practices together and have that shared, build that shared knowledge and experience, but our solitary practice is completely up to us. You know, there's not much that dictates, you know, what a personal practice looks like. So there's still so much of that opportunity I have to build stuff that works for me individually, and to have that awesome group experience. So that's, I really love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's sort of the quick and dirty version of our tour through paganism. But something else I want to talk about is how we work it, given that we come from different paths of Wicca, because we, you know, we're speaking sort of the same language but different dialects. And how does that work out for us?
Yeah, well, I think that will probably be the nature of some of our future episodes as well. But I don't know. I mean, part of it is the stuff we do together is like for us, right? Like it's not, we're not really trying to be part of anything other than what works for us. And it's also fun to build some of that stuff on our own. And, you know, a Wiccan framework really is just a suggestion at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, no, it
like,
is.
Like, you know, there's so many opportunities to do different things and to build different things. So that's what I enjoy most about kind of our family practice, if you will, you know, our work together.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to be beholden to anything in particular.
Exactly. And I think that'll be something that a lot of pagan couples, blended pagan couples, will have to deal with if they're out there. Because, yeah, even though, you know, my solitary practice, as we said before, like I was in it. I was practicing all the time. So I had all of this kind of very vibrant liturgy that I poached and or edited from other sources that I would use and I had memorized and all that, which I still do. I can still rattle it off left and right. But you didn't have that same experience. So working with you, it definitely makes me go back to that level of, okay, how did I start this? And how do we kick this off so we can build something together?
Yeah.
Because for a family practice, I want it to be something that feels authentically us, not authentically Cunningham, not authentically Ravenwolf, not authentically Buckland, or authentically our own traditions.
Right.
I would much prefer that it be us
yeah.
creating it all. So that's something really interesting that we'll definitely get into in further episodes.
Yeah. And well, I guess that's kind of the gist of our paths.
Yeah.
But I guess we could spend the rest of this episode talking a little bit about what we hope for this podcast and kind of what we are excited to talk about in the future, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I just hope that people are listening.
Well, they may not yet, but yeah, hopefully eventually.
Absolutely. I just like, again, building community. So having people interact with us, sending us emails or comments or things like that, just letting us know like what they think or what they want to hear. That's something I really enjoyed about YouTube, and I'm hoping to be back into on the podcasting scene.
For sure. And if you, so I guess it's time to say that. If you do want to email us, you can email us at contact@besombuddies.com. That'll be in the show notes as well. So if you're watching on YouTube or listening on all the places that hopefully this podcast will be in the future, hopefully it'll be there.
Absolutely. And as far as topics that I'm really excited for, I personally can't wait to get into some of this weird semantical discussions that we get into about, yeah, like, you know, is prayer magic? Is what's the benefits of solitary versus group practice? Polarity.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. That's what I'm really excited
about. Yeah. I mean, that's the fun stuff we always talk about. Absolutely. That it'll be fun to dig into.
Our road tripping conversations.
They are, truly.
So for you, what are you most looking forward to?
I'm excited to use this medium to talk about those things, obviously. But I think it'd also be a really cool chance to talk about like things we know, like being able to impart, you know, our own experiences and thoughts about things. So maybe like little educational snippets. And I know I listened to podcasts like years and years ago, Pagan Podcast, and, you know, they've really come and gone over the past 10 years. And I got so much about it, particularly as like a younger seeker. So, I mean, obviously there are seekers of all ages out there. And you know, I hope this could be a place that they can come and sort of build that community, like you said, and, you know, learn some stuff. And hopefully we'll be able to talk about that, which I anticipate we will.
Absolutely. And what kind of topics are you particularly interested in talking about?
I'm excited to talk about some of the more like meta conversations about like the pagan community, because I really enjoy following like different pagan blogs like Pathos Pagan and different social media groups out there, and seeing the conversation and some of the discourse. I always have like something to say. I don't always say it in social media just because it's not always the place, and it's not always my place to like butt in and say what I have to say, but I think this will be a great venue to do that. So I'm excited to kind of be more current and keep an eye on what the discourse is like and talk about it a little bit here with you.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that this will do is allow us to like pick each other's brain in a different way.
Yeah.
Because so much of our conversation happens again at 3 a.m. when I roll over and go, but what about the chalice? So I think having it kind of recorded so that it's not lost in the ephemera of our lives as the years turn by, I think will be very fabulous.
Yeah. I'm excited. I mean, plus, all of this was a great excuse for me to buy shit.
Ultimately true, yes.
I bought all these microphones and became an audiophile overnight.
Yeah, it's impressive. So I think that's really a wrap. So thank you for tuning in. We're so excited to hear from you.
Yep. And if you want to email us again, it's contact@besombuddies.com. It's in the show notes. We also have a website, besombuddies.com. Where it's just kind of like a blog of everything, but all that stuff is there as well. So you can check us out there if you want to drop us a line or learn more.
So this has been Besom Buddies, a pagan podcast.
See ya.